I'll invite you to turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 16. And we find ourselves now nearing the end of this book where Paul is doing some farewells and giving some last exhortations to the Corinthians. Corinthians chapter 16, I'm going to be reading verses 5 through 12 this morning, and I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, beginning in verse 5. This is the Apostle Paul writing, "I'll visit you after passing through Macedonia, for I intend to pass through Macedonia, and perhaps I'll stay with you, or even spend the winter, so that you may send me on my way wherever I go. I do not want to see you now just in passing, for I hope to spend some time with you, if the Lord permits. But I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a wide door for effective work has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. If Timothy comes, see that he has nothing to fear among you, for he is doing the work of the Lord just as I am. Therefore, let no one despise him. Send him on his way in peace, so that he may come to me, for I am expecting him with the brothers. Now concerning our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to visit you with the other brothers, but he was not at all willing to come now. He will come when he has the opportunity." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So, it seems providential, at least to my thinking, that we find ourselves in these verses of Corinthians during this time of transition for our community. And I know that this is a hard time for many of us, certainly for our family, as we try to imagine what the future looks like, a future that until a few weeks ago, our family wasn't really preparing for. And until just last week, our community at New Beginnings wasn't expecting. And I hope that Paul's words here will have some comfort and some challenge and some reminders for us that will speak into this season. It's always interesting to me, you know, that I seek the Lord earnestly and diligently for the next book to preach through. When I felt that he was guiding me to 1 Corinthians, I knew that that was the book, at least I felt convicted it was the book for us. And I had no idea when we began this so many months ago that when Paul did his farewells in 1 Corinthians 16, that it would be in the same season of transition for me. I think that's providential. I know that sometimes God's providence looks like human engineering, but that really has not been my heart. As you know, I don't plan out how long the series will go or how many weeks exactly. We simply preach through the book as the Lord leads us until we finished every word. So you've been through that with me many times. I think it must be God's grace that we're here. And I also recognize there's I used to box a little bit, never formally. My dad had gloves and used to do some boxing coaching when I was a kid. And I learned this lesson that the best way to close the ears is by the nose. And what I mean by that is that if you've ever boxed or ever been in an altercation or even in a sport where you get hit in the face, whether it's soccer or anything else, when you get hit in the nose, your ears close. There's nothing else you can think about except that pain. I know that that is a reality in a lot more areas than just in sports. In many ways, we need to learn that if we want to bring a criticism to somebody or if we'd like to give a corrective word, that we don't begin with a really harsh or critical comment, because again, that's like getting punched in the nose. The ears close after that. Everything else you say is worthless because the emotion takes over. It's similar at significant moments in our lives. I'm aware when I do a wedding or a funeral that ears are not particularly open at those times, that once that bride and groom see each other at the altar and the nervousness and the excitement and the weight of the moment falls on them and I start to preach, they just stare at me blankly, and I know that nothing's getting in because the ears are closed. The emotion has overwhelmed everything. In many ways, I expect that these next few sermons will feel a bit like trying to listen after being hit in the nose, and I'm aware of that. Maybe it's providential again that we're preaching in this format on Facebook where it can be recorded, so that after some of the emotions have settled, some words of encouragement might still be spoken. At least that's what I'm hoping for. I want to point you to one of our more important verses in this passage. In many ways, it's guiding my whole conversation this morning. It's this one. It's in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 7, Paul writes these words to the Corinthians, I do not want to see you now just in passing, for I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits. That's the key phrase. If the Lord permits. I think Paul means that more earnestly than many of us do when we speak similarly in the church. Many of us, when we say things like, if the Lord permits, or if God is willing, we sort of mean something like pagans mean, if the fates allow, if the stars align, if happenstance just happens to work out. We're sort of just talking about big cosmic things that are bigger than us and we can't control and we're caught up in them and we'd like to do this, but who knows what'll happen. But I don't think that's what Paul means when he says that phrase. Corinthians and all that he said throughout that book leads me to believe Paul really means this. Paul really believes that he is caught up in a mission that God has called him to complete, and that where he goes on that mission is in the Lord's hands. The Lord is guiding him where he wants him to be. And so he's telling the Corinthians early on in his farewells, I really do want to come to you. I know I haven't been there in a long time. That came out in the first Corinthians, in the rest of the book. But I want to be there. But I can't be there right now. And if the Lord allows me to do it, I will come and spend some time with you. But for now, there is an open door for the gospel in Ephesus. There are many adversaries. I need to be here for now. This is what Paul is saying. My dad used to have a phrase similar to that, and I think he meant it as earnestly as Paul means it. He used to say when we would plan for a vacation, or he would plan to change jobs, or we talked about switching schools when I was a young person, he would add to the end of almost every plan, if the Lord tarries. And some of you, maybe you've heard that saying if you've been in the church for a while. Tarries mean if the Lord continues to delay his coming, if he continues to remain in the heavens, if Jesus doesn't return before these plans come to fruition. And I learned early on that my dad meant that, that it wasn't just a saying for him. He really believed that we served a God who could interrupt our plans. And he was always making room for that interruption. I grew up that way. And I know some of you did too. And some of you live with that kind of expectation that God could interrupt what you plan to do. I think that's the heart of this passage, and I think it's all over what Paul is trying to say to the Corinthians as he prepares to say goodbye. So we are going to look at 3 points this morning, which is normal for me. I tried to make them alliterate. I'm sorry if they're not as clear as they might be. But as we consider Paul's farewells to the Corinthians, we'll look today at the implications, first, of Paul's absence and what he's trying to tell them in his absence. Second, Paul's admonitions about future teachers and preachers who will come through. And then third, Paul's admission about something he tried to do for them, but he wasn't able to finish. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to begin with Paul's absence. Look at verses 5 through 9 of 1 Corinthians 16. I will visit you after passing through Macedonia, for I intend to pass through Macedonia, and perhaps I will stay with you or even spend the winter so that you may send me on my way wherever I go. I do not want to see you now just in passing, for I hope to spend some time with you, as we've discussed, if the Lord permits. But I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a wide door for effective work has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. Those called by God, and we've already started this conversation, those called by God are called to pursue open doors for the gospel. The Lord sends those he calls into ministry where he wills to send them for as long as he wills them to serve where he places them. We all have plans, pastors, missionaries, and lay folks who are called into various kinds of ministries. We all have plans. And when we talk about the future we imagine, we're talking about the future we can see, the future we hope for, the future that we believe in. But somehow tagged on to all those plans has to always be that phrase, if the Lord allows, if the Lord tarries, if it continues to be God's will. The Lord's call to a minister, a missionary, a local preacher, a lay person who is engaging in a mission field, the Lord's call is absolute. Our discernment is always secondary to his calling. There's a song that we sing at New Beginnings. We've sung it a couple times. It's one of my favorites. And every time I sing the lyric I'm going to mention here, it kind of gets me choked up because I recognize this is the kind of call I'm caught up in. The song is So Will I. And the lyrics are these: if the wind goes where you send it, so will I. If the wind goes where you send it, so will I. Do you believe that? Or do we just sing it? Do we expect that he could send his spirit on us and ask us the way he did Abraham, to leave everything behind and to follow him to a new place? Do we believe that? I recognize that the call to pastoral ministry is that kind of a call. We're caught up in God's plans, and they don't always match with the plans we've laid ourselves. The Corinthians had experienced this too. They had experienced several waves of teachers and preachers since they were founded. Paul founded the church originally, but those who were with us in the series, you remember he had to talk with them about the people who came afterwards. So Paul planted the first seeds of the church here, and Apollos, probably one of their favorite preachers, came through, and really some growth happened under his ministry. And Paul has to say, but who are we? God is the one who gives the growth. This is God's mission field. And each minister is there as long as God has them there. According to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 through 9, these very farewells here in 1 Corinthians 16 may have been intended to address a continuing miscomprehension in the Corinthian church about human spiritual leadership. You can look at these this verse here, this is 1 Corinthians 3, 5 through 9. This was from an earlier sermon. What then is Apollos? What then is Paul? Servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord assigned to each. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. The one who plants and the one who waters have a common purpose, and each will receive wages according to the labor of each. For we are God's servants, working together. You are God's field, God's building. Paul's point here is that leaders come for a season, and they serve God in a larger work of the kingdom. It's important for those who are called to stay in one place and be the salt and light, the hands and feet of Jesus in one location. It's important for those who are called to that work, not to confuse the work of the leaders who are sent for seasons with the blessing of God on their community. The work of God continues, no matter the person, because the work and the growth is God's. This is some advice Paul is giving in his absence. Now let's look at what he gives in terms of admonition for future preachers who will come through. Look at 1 Corinthians 16. This is verses 10 to 11. If Timothy comes, see that he has nothing to fear among you, for he is doing the work of the Lord just as I am. Therefore, let no one despise him. Send him on his way in peace so that he may come to me, for I'm expecting him with the brothers. Now, as our final point will make clear, if it's not already somewhat clear because of the reference to 1 Corinthians 3 we just made, Timothy is not on the list of the Corinthians' favorite preachers. Some of you remember the sermon. They were in a dispute over which of them was the greatest based on who they had come to faith in Jesus through. And so some of them apparently had followed Jesus himself while he was walking on the earth and had been baptized by him, and they thought they were pretty special. Others had been baptized by Paul, and they thought they were pretty special. Others had been baptized by the Corinthians' favorite preacher and evangelist, Apollos, and they thought they were pretty special. Others apparently were baptized by Peter, who Jesus set as first of the apostles, and they thought they were pretty special. This was the dispute in Corinthians. What you'll notice is that Timothy is not on that list. He's not one that was on their radar. In fact, we know from the book of 1 Timothy that Timothy was a very young preacher. And in the book of 1 Timothy, Paul is worried that the people who were worshiping God in the city of Ephesus would have difficulty with Timothy's age. And so he encouraged Timothy to not let them despise him because he was young, but to continue to be an example to the flock of God and to continue to guard his doctrine and teach clearly what had been passed on to him from the apostles. So we already know that Timothy had run into a few obstacles in another Greek city or another city of the ancient world. So it's possible here that Paul is concerned he might receive similar treatment because maybe of his age, or maybe there's another limitation in Timothy that Paul was concerned about. Paul's point seems to be that the Corinthians will not always get to choose the spiritual leaders who will come to minister to them in God's name. They will not always get to choose those who come to deliver the apostles' words to them and help them to understand what is expected of those who follow Jesus. Not every preacher who comes through any given community, the Corinthians included, and they were a big community. This is like the early church's version of a mega church, and they expected only the best of the best would come to them. But Paul's admonition is that not every preacher who comes through will be a Paul or will be an Apollos. Some will be Timothy's. But if they're coming to do the work of the Lord, and the Lord has sent them, then the Corinthians are to receive them. Now, there are places in which Paul reveals a deep concern But there are other places where Paul is deeply concerned that his churches are entertaining false teachers. So he's not saying that just anyone who comes in Jesus' name should be welcomed without question. That's not what he's talking about. There are passages like in Galatians, for instance, in which Paul reminds the church that if somebody comes preaching a gospel other than that preserved by the apostles, so for us it's in the scriptures, for them it was orally being transmitted through the apostles and through people they had designated to bear their words. For us it's in the scriptures. But if somebody were to come and teach a gospel that is other than the gospel that has been received, Paul has said in Galatians and other places that we should not entertain those teachers. We should not welcome them warmly. In fact, we should give them no opportunity to speak. So those, it's not as though he's just saying anyone who comes you should embrace. But Paul is saying that if somebody is coming who is delivering the apostles' words and who is on mission with God, then they should have nothing to fear from a church that calls itself a church of Jesus Christ. Paul reminds the Corinthians that they are to embrace preachers and teachers who come to them in the course of doing God's work, whether young and old or old, whether impressive or unimpressive. And I think Paul's admonition here should ring in the ears of the church. See that he has nothing to fear among you. Let no one despise him. And when he leaves, send him on his way in peace. This is the charge of a church when God sends those to speak about his apostles' teachings. There was an older churchgoer, not affiliated with our congregation at all, but in the area in Concord that I had opportunity to converse with some time ago. And he was raving about our church and about our community. He said he loved the people. He really felt that the Spirit of the Lord was at work there. He said he loved the messages. And he had been between churches for a while. So I asked him, why didn't you come if you loved it so much? And this is no joke. He looked at me and said, "You're just so young. You're just so young." This is, I think, Paul's biggest concern with the Corinthians when Timothy comes, that they will have something other than the pastor's commission by God that causes them to have deaf ears to the word God might be speaking. And so he encourages them to welcome Timothy warmly. You see, God sends and recalls preachers and teachers as he sees fit. The church must be ready to release and to embrace those God has called and those God is sending. This is what Paul is reminding the Corinthians, and he seems concerned that they're not a church that does this very well. Finally, let's look at Paul's admission. Look at verse 12. "Now concerning our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to visit you with the other brothers, but he was not at all willing to come now. He'll come when he has opportunity." Now, this is such an interesting passage to me because we know from the rest of 1 Corinthians that Apollos was the Corinthians' choice. If they couldn't have Paul, if they couldn't have Peter, if Jesus himself wasn't going to return, then what they want is they want Apollos. So, interesting. And Paul recognizes that that's their preference. And so because it's their preference, Paul does try to get Apollos to go and spend some time with them, to encourage them. But Apollos refused for now. Now, when I first graduated from seminary, I interviewed with a church in Ohio. And they, in the course of the interview, it became very clear that this church was really looking for Alistair Begg. That's who they wanted. Now, Alistair Begg, if you don't know who he is a great preacher, one of my favorites. He does Truth for Life. You can find him on the radio. He's on the internet. He does seminars and all kinds of things. He's a wonderful preacher. I mean, I would want Alistair Begg to be my pastor. So I understood their instinct. And the reason, though we were young, the reason they looked at us is simply because I'm an expository preacher and we preach through books, which is what Alistair Begg does. And so they saw that on the resume. They thought, we'll give this guy a shot. But it was very quick in the interview that they were just looking for Alistair Begg 2.0. And some of you know well enough that I'm not Alistair Begg 2.0. At least I certainly didn't present that way then, and I don't feel I am that now. I love Alistair Begg. He could be my pastor. But churches are okay. That's okay. There's nothing wrong. Paul doesn't criticize them for having a favorite preacher. He doesn't criticize them for asking for Apollos. He actually tries to get Apollos to come. But Apollos won't come. And what Paul wants them to remember is that the future of their church does not depend on whether their favorite preachers come and spend time with them. That is not where the future depends. The future of the church has always been in God's hands, and there is as much spiritual value for a community in receiving a Timothy and supporting him as there is in receiving an Apollos and supporting him. As we begin to think through some of Paul's encouragements here, I want to get back to a conversation briefly that we had last week. It's the conversation of the difference between theists, deists, and atheist agnostics. So a theist is someone who believes in a personal God, who believes that God is living and active in the world, that not only did he create, but he is still creating, he's still speaking, he's still guiding. He's still engaged and involved in the unfolding of history. We're Wesleyans. We believe in free will, so we believe that people do things that God does not want us to do, but still, God is the Lord of this world and is still actively engaged. That's theism. A deist believes that God started this whole thing, but he has stepped back, and now we're more or less on our own. And of course, an atheist denies, or an agnostic says he doesn't know if there's a God, so he lives as though there isn't. And an atheist doesn't believe there is a God, so lives accordingly. So these are important distinctions. The theistic God, the involved God, the God who interrupts plans and disrupts lives, is the God of the Scriptures. A theistic God steps in when we don't expect him. He invited Abraham, who had apparently a decent enough life in the city of Ur, in the nation of Chaldea, and God asked him to leave all that behind in his father's household and to go to a land that he would show him. That's a theistic God. He involves himself. The same theistic God came to the people of Israel who were in slavery in Egypt, and they didn't like their slavery, but they did like Egypt. And instead of just helping them to overthrow Egypt so they could take over the land they loved, he said, I'm going to deliver you from Egypt, and you're going to follow me into the desert. That's a theistic God. He interrupts plans. He doesn't always do what we expect him to do. This is the God who interrupted all of human life by becoming flesh in the person of Jesus, who told the Pharisees that the way they were interpreting the law of God was incorrect, and he disrupted all of their theology in the first century and tried to put them back on track for God. This is the theistic God that I believe in. I was pastoring in Kansas City, outside Kansas City in Grain Valley, when the call to come to New Beginnings came to me. And that call disrupted that church severely. We were just beginning to get to the point where we could become an established and long-term ministry. It was a church I had planted. Two of our best friends in the world attended that church, and every member of that community was a friend. And when the Lord asked us to come here, which we felt very strongly, we had to tell them that he was asking us to leave. It devastated that community too, because we had created such good relationships. Their pain was joy for new beginnings, at least I think for some. I think probably not for everybody, and I understand, but for some it was. And now the Lord has stepped in and interrupted our plans again. And he has asked us to go to another place in which he is opening doors for the kind of gospel ministry he's called us to participate in. We believe in a theistic God. That's why I'm open to him interrupting our lives. We have to be careful that we don't fall to the allure of deism because it's safer and more predictable. Because a God who is not involved, who will not interrupt our plans, also does not inconvenience our lives. So a pastor who's a deist can come and say, I'm going to be here for 20 years, and he can be sure he's going to be there for 20 years, because as long as he chooses to stay, he will remain. So it's in his hands whether he comes or she comes. But that's not the way that I have lived my life. It's not the way I felt my call to ministry. It's not the way I experienced my first call to leave Massachusetts and go to an unknown area of Chicago where we knew nobody and had no ministry prospects. It wasn't the way that we felt our call to Kansas City or the way that we felt our call to come here. I'm not that pastor. I can lay my plans out front, but I cannot predict what God will do. And I know that that sounds like little solace, but I do believe that the God who calls also is a God who cares. And he calls us together for a season. And when he calls that season to end, he will provide care in the aftermath and a new opportunity for hearing from the apostles again in the next calling. This is the nature of what it is to follow a theistic God. Believe me, I don't want God to be a theistic God. I don't want him to be involved when I want my plans to carry the day. But I do want him to be involved when I get sick and I'd like him to heal me. And I do want him to be involved when I've lost my job and I need him to help me find another one. So we can be somewhat divided on this. But the God who comes and interrupts our diseases is also the God who comes and interrupts our lives and our plans. We have to trust that he knows what he's doing. We also have to trust that those who believe they're hearing his call are discerning it correctly. And there's no guarantee of that, I know. But we are all beholden to follow what God is telling us to do. I hope that that's true for you, as it is for me. I think Paul is trying to help the Corinthians. In some ways, you can see the hurt in this book for those of you who have been with us through the series, that they have been somewhat abandoned, they feel, and left on their own to figure out how to live out this faith. And then Paul writes these letters and criticizes them for the way they figure it out, which may seem very unfair. If Paul was concerned about how they came to understand what it meant to be Jesus' people, why didn't he stay longer? Why didn't Apollos, who had grown that church to probably its present size based on some of the details of the text, why didn't he stay? Why did he move on? And now they've got these previous leaders writing back to them and criticizing how they developed when they were left by themselves. So I can understand some of the frustration with the Corinthians. That's probably why in 2 Corinthians we can tell that they had some very negative things to say about Paul, and he's responding to those in that book. I understand it's difficult, but in the end, the Lord plants churches to be his hands and feet in communities, and he calls leaders to come for seasons to build and to strengthen and to feed those sheep who are doing his work where they live. In many ways, a pastor's call is itinerant. Now, I know some pastors stay in one place for a very long time. That looks to be what eventually happened for Timothy in Ephesus, maybe Titus too, but it's not Paul's call. And it's not Apollos' call. And though one day Jen and I hope the Lord will leave us in one place for a very long time, I identify with Paul in the way that God often comes unexpectedly and says, follow me to a place I will show you. Leave everything behind. Come minister to strangers and I'll show you the work I have for you to do. And that's how we feel. And so we love you, and so does God. I think it is by his providence we're discussing this passage today. And I hope that you will come to trust God's calling the way that I do, that you will never feel abandoned because things don't go according to plan, but that you will recognize that those who are faithful will be guided by the Lord, and that he will work all things to our good if we are of those who love him and are called according to his purpose.